children can't even make it to school.
Right.
Eleanor Stein, when you were visiting in El Salvador, you saw what they were able to do in terms of combating climate change. And you said before that you thought their understanding of it was more sophisticated, really, than people up in the United States. Talk to us about that. What are they doing to try to reverse the process?
Well, of course, El Salvador is not a major producer of greenhouse gas emissions, but it is a major victim of the results of those emissions. So they have traditionally been subject to storms coming from the Pacific coast, and now they're subject to storms also coming from the Atlantic coast. So they're, you know, in a little spit of land in a very vulnerable place. And they have put a tremendous amount of effort into the regions we visited, which was the Lower Lempa region, into building an adaptation plan. They're subject to terrible flooding, devastating flooding that's killed hundreds of people in the country in the last few years. And they've put a lot of effort into an evacuation plan, which is very community-based, very sophisticated, and has worked remarkably well. So in floods that have led to loss of life in all the rest of the country, in this region, they have an early warning system with a radio station run by teenagers. They have a very community-based evacuation system, so every elderly person knows which teenager is coming to get her in a boat and when they'll be there. And it's really organized from the ground up, as opposed to a lot of the measures that we see, which are very much from the top down and may not get to the communities that are most at risk. That's just one example.
Yeah, it's an example they could have picked up on in Red Hook during our last storm.
Not to mention in your neighborhood and during Sandy.
I was a refugee. I was a climate refugee.
You were.
New York City.
You could have, if you lived in El Salvador, you probably would have done better.
As usual, it's wonderful to hear from you, and this is just some really heartening examples of the right thing happening despite corporate enterprises trying to take over, especially on the SEED initiative.
Take over with the help of the United States.
Exactly.
With a free trade agreement,
right,
and a war. But Eleanor, you mentioned EcoViva, and I just want people to be able to help and support. So
good.
Tell us about that website and what people can do in going to that.
Well, as you can tell, this project needs a lot of help, and they run wonderful tours twice a year where you can go there and learn about it. You can donate to EcoViva, and the funds there go directly to the Mangrove Association and the other community organizations in El Salvador. And the best way to do that is to go to their website, www.eco-viva.org, ecoviva.org. It's a great website, very informative. You'll learn a lot about the country. And they really are trying to develop a method of progressive government and progressive development, which is community-based and local-based and environmentally tremendously conscious, that I think is pretty unique in the world, and I think is something we all need to support.
Oh, it's an exciting example.
Definitely.
That we need. So thank you,
yeah,
Eleanor, very much.
Thank you very
Have
much.
Have a great day.
Thank you, Eleanor.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you want to hear Law and Disorder again, go to lawanddisorder.org on the web. You should also go to Law and Disorder Radio on Facebook.
I'm Rosie Perez, and this is WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio in New York.
On tonight's Earth Watch, a celebration of the life of William Moses Kunstler on his 80th birthday with an audio documentary originally broadcast on June 8th of 1999. Also included are some elements from the Kunstler Memorial, which took place on November 19th, 1995. The program opens with news of events in space and on the globe. You will heartily enjoy Robert's rendition of the candidates of the Darwin Awards.
Oh, described his case with full and adequate sufficiency. Then did the lawyer don an earnest face and sigh, now to the matter of my fee. I've never sought such legal help before, the subdued client solemnly replied. I need to have some help upon that score, and hope that you will be my learned guide. The lawyer coughed and started to explain how much it cost to meet his overhead and why this case would need his might and main if justice were to be adroitly led. He paused, a thoughtful look upon his brow, then charged the most that traffic would allow.
Who else but Bill Kunstler? Happy birthday. This is the 80th birthday of one of the greatest lawyers to walk this earth. A true radical. Celebrating his spirit tonight, lots of Bill Kunstler celebrating his 80th birthday. Also, some other business. A lot of developments taking place in the skies these days. All the easier to see them now that two of the most progressive communities in New York have been powered out. No power for Harlem or Washington Heights above 155th Street. Power failures also in the Lower East Side right up until tonight. That, Kunstler, the sky, also Darwin at work. A lot of material tonight on Earthwatch. I hope you like it. I'm Robert Knight. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. And let's see, right off the top, there's an excellent piece in today's Daily News, the Daily News of Wednesday. On page 79 in the radio dial, news about radio, David Hinckley, one of a number of great writers over at the Daily News. Jim Dwyer's piece on the power failure was also interesting yesterday. But in Wednesday's Daily News, take a look if you have a copy. I'll read it to you if you don't have one. Hinckley does a very insightful article about the encroaching commercialism that is taking over radio stations. It's titled, Pay for Play Gets Plug. With proper disclosure, it's kosher, says Trade Magazine. And it's a very nice analysis of how record companies are basically buying time and paying the payola to the management instead of the workers at the radio station and having their records being pushed by giving big money to radio outfits to promote their musical product. WBAI is a listener-sponsored radio station. We don't put up with any of that foolishness, but it's a very interesting article. And in the third column, it goes on to say the following, which is a very proud and happy moment for me and my colleagues over on Wake Up Call, where I do the news in the morning. And Hinckley goes on to write, around the dial, WBAI morning co-host Bernard White yesterday asked newsman Robert Knight exactly what the heat humidity index is. Knight replied, quote, "It's a publicity stunt to create more of a bonding experience among viewers of the evening news, so they will be more inclined to make impulse purchases of the sponsor's products." End quote. Nice item. Yeah, that's what it is. It's basically BS. Anyway, that's from today's Daily News. Thank you, David Hinckley, very fine media analyst here in New York. And here's our own reaction to all that weather jive. This is Earthwatch on WBAI New York. A lot going on in the skies tonight. One of the more interesting one is an earthbound phenomenon that happened with the launch of a Russian Proton rocket. It's a rocket that has a very stable launch history, but this time it failed. Just a few minutes into the launch cycle, it malfunctioned, went off course, exploded in midair, possibly leaking dangerous liquid fuel onto portions of Siberia as it crashed. An upper stage assembly for placing satellites in precise orbits was obviously unable to be deployed. It's significant because one of the ways that Russia has tried to make the money it so desperately needs is by launching satellites for other nations, including the United States. Now, Russia has been negotiating for many months now for the right to have a higher quota, a greater number of satellites licensed by the government to be launched there. It could be significant if there are questions of unreliability on just how many launches will now be taking place from Russian or former Soviet territory. The Baikonur launch base has suspended Proton launches that will create a traffic jam for quite a few satellites, including a General Electric communication satellite and a portion of the International Space Station. So that is one of the things happening in space. Yet another is the astonishing sight of a meteor exploding in New Zealand. You may have seen that on video news. It was seen widely across the country. It looked like a bomb bursting in air. And it apparently entered the Earth's atmosphere at a low trajectory at about 72,000 miles per hour before exploding into multiple fragments. This one made it down very low, and it was just an excellent reminder of just how fragile and how connected we are to the greater world, as the old scholars would say, the greater world. Connections to the greater world are also very much, I suppose, indicated in regard to the death of the human fly, the amazing young man who jumped from the Chrysler Building, the Empire State Building, and the World Trade Center here in New York. He became a hero to me, if not only for those actions, but because Mayor Surley called him an opportunist and a jerk. Those were his words. He called that brave young man a jerk, pot kettle. And, of course, he died doing what he wanted to do. He died jumping into a fjord in Norway, went into a fog bank, and malcalculated, hit the edge of a cliff, and basically streaked down the side to his death. It's too bad, I mean, but he certainly gave us some indication of a life worth living. But then again, that kind of activity is kind of like natural selection at work, isn't it? Huh? By the way, the Dalai Lama announced through a spokesperson yesterday that he's decided that he's had it, and that his next incarnation, you know, he might not even reincarnate in Tibet in protest of the Chinese occupation of his country. I hear tell that he's thinking of reincarnating, oh, somewhere nice, warm, maybe Acapulco. Memo to Dalai Lama. There is an opening, we hear, for daredevil stunt divers. Well, all of that just brings all the more to mind the issue of natural selection. And Operations Director Paul Wunder has shared with me one of some of the most important awards that come out each year. They are called the Darwin Awards. I think you'll get the gist of it. The material stands on its own. I'll just read to you in order the increasing significant runners-up in the competition for the 1999 Darwin Awards. From Los Angeles, Ani Saduki and his brother decided to remove a bee's nest from a shed on their property with the aid of a pineapple. Now, a pineapple is an illegal firecracker, which is the explosive equivalent of about a half stick of dynamite. They ignited the fuse and retreated to watch from inside their home behind a window, some 10 feet away from the hive. The concussion of the explosion shattered the window inwards, seriously lacerating Ani. Deciding that Mr. Saduki needed stitches, the brothers then headed out to go to a nearby hospital. While walking towards their car, Ani was stung three times by the surviving bees. Small wonder. Unbeknownst to either brother, Ani was allergic to bee venom and died of suffocation en route to the hospital. Darwin Awards, natural selection at work. Number two, Derek Richards was charged in April in Minneapolis with third-degree murder in the death of his beloved cousin, Kenneth Richards. According to police, Derek suggested a game of Russian roulette and put a semi-automatic pistol instead of the more traditional revolver the Kin's head and fired. Natural selection at work. Number three, from Phillipsburg, New Jersey, nearby. An unidentified 29-year-old male choked to death on a sequined pasty he had orally removed from an exotic dancer at a local establishment. I didn't think he was going to eat it, the dancer identified as Ginger said. Number four. According to police in Windsor, Ontario, that's just south of Detroit. Yes, I said that correctly, south of Detroit. Daniel Colta and Randy Taylor died in a head-on collision, thereby earning a tie in the game of chicken that they were playing with their snowmobiles. From Moscow. Here, the words are almost redundant. A drunk security man asked a colleague at a bank they were guarding to stab his bulletproof vest to see if it would protect him against a knife attack. It didn't. The 25-year-old guard died of a heart wound. Number six. In France, Jacques Lefebvre left nothing to chance when he decided to commit suicide. This is good. This is really good. He stood at the top of a tall cliff and tied a noose around his neck. He tied the other end of the rope to a large rock. He then drank some poison and set fire to his clothes. He even tried to shoot himself at the last moment. And here's what he did. He jumped and fired the pistol. But the bullet missed him completely and cut through the rope above him. Free of the threat of hanging, he plunged into the sea. The sudden dunking extinguished the flames in his clothes and made him vomit the poison. He was dragged out of the water by a kind fisherman and was taken to a hospital where he died of hypothermia. Natural selection at work. Number seven. A Renton, Washington man tried to commit a robbery, probably his first attempt, as suggested by the fact that he had no previous record of violent crime and by his terminally stupid choices. One, the target was H&J Leather and Firearms, a gun shop. The shop was full of customers in a state where most of the adult population is licensed to carry concealed handguns. To enter the shop, he had to step around a marked police patrol car at the front door. An officer in uniform was standing next to the counter having coffee before reporting to duty. Upon seeing the officer, the would-be robber announced a stick-up and fired a few wild shots. The officer and a clerk promptly returned fire, removing him from the gene pool. No one else was hurt. And here now, the pièce de résistance. The number one winner of this year's Darwin Awards comes from Manitoba, Canada. From Thompson, Manitoba, Canada. Telephone Relay Company Night Watchman Edward Baker, age 31, was killed early Christmas morning by excessive microwave radiation exposure. He was apparently attempting to keep warm next to a telecommunications feed horn. Now, you've seen those probably. They're odd-looking kind of curved pyramids atop radio relay towers. What they are is basically microwave ovens focused in a certain direction. And the high-frequency energy is used to send signals. It's a little short of radio, but it works quite well for communications. But it has the obvious side effects of a microwave. Well, Edward Baker was killed early Christmas morning by excessive microwave radiation exposure. He was apparently attempting to keep warm next to a telecommunications feed horn. Baker had been suspended on a safety violation once the year before, according to Northern Manitoba signal relay spokespeople. Tanya Cook noted that Baker's earlier infraction was for defeating a safety shutoff switch and entering a restricted maintenance catwalk in order to, dig this, to stand in front of the microwave dish. He had told co-workers that it was the only way he could stay warm during his 12-hour shift at the station, where winter temperatures often drop to 40 below zero. Microwaves can heat water molecules within human tissue in the same way that they heat food in microwave ovens. For his Christmas shift, Baker reportedly brought a 12-pack of beer and a plastic lawn chair, which he positioned directly in line with the strongest microwave beam. Baker had not been told about a tenfold boost in microwave power planned that night to handle the anticipated increase in holiday long-distance calling traffic. Flash forward to the next morning. Baker's body was discovered by the daytime watchman, John Burns, who was greeted by an odor that he mistook for a Christmas roast that he thought that Baker must have prepared as a surprise. Burns also reported to company officials that Baker's unfinished beers had exploded. This year's winners of the Darwin Awards, or as I prefer to say, natural selection at work. I'm Robert Knight, and this is Earthwatch. is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. You're tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. Earthwatch is a program of trans-terrestrial radio. And our friendliness with the sky is something that we have a very special treat to share with you tonight, if you're going to be up about the time they kick you out of the bars. At 3:49 this morning, there's going to be a very spectacular phenomenon in the sky, and it's pretty easy for you to see. It is a super iridium flare. The iridium flare is what happens when the satellites used for telecommunications in their crisscross lattice kind of orbits in a dozen different planes or 11 different orbital planes, they're constantly flying overhead, and sometimes they're at just the right spot where the sun, like a bank shot, sends its rays of light, where they hit the Teflon mirrored surface of the antenna of an iridium satellite, and suddenly, like a cowboy seeing the glint of a rifle barrel in the distance in the mountains, you get to see brightly illuminated for a brief shining moment the presence of these satellites that are constantly ringing our environment. That's going to happen tonight, a very, very bright one, at exactly 3:49 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on this 8th of July, 1999. It's going to be in the direction almost exactly due west. Now, if you live in Manhattan and you know the way the north, south, east, west streets go, the street grid, if you look westbound on one of the streets, look a little bit to the left, a little bit to the south of where the street is pointing. This one will be real easy to find because there will be a bright star almost on top of where this spectacular flash will occur. You'll see a light as bright as one of Giuliani's police helicopters outside your window. Yeah, 3:49. The direction or the azimuth, it's what we call 275 degrees. The height will be 50 degrees up in the sky. That's roughly halfway up from the horizon, halfway between the horizon and the top of the sky, straight up your zenith. So look a little bit south of a westbound street, halfway up the sky at 3:49 this morning, a little bit after this show. 3:49 a.m., azimuth 275, that's a little south of west, altitude 50 degrees, that's just above halfway. Real easy to find because there will be a bright star nearby. If you see that bright star in the west, that star is called Vega. Just kind of focus your eyes in that direction, and at exactly 3:49, that is between 3:49 and 3:50, you got to be right on time, you will see something that will fill you with wonder, an iridium flare, one of the very bright ones. It's my gift to you tonight as I prepare for travels westbound. Leaving on a jet plane, don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go. I'll be in search of journalism, where I'll be giving a lecture to the Unity Conference on investigative reporting. Newsman Robert Knight. Well, the heat humidity index is pure BS. So don't miss that. Now, here we come to the cornerstone of tonight's program. This is the 80th birthday of William Moses Kunstler. He's somewhere laughing at us. And there are occasionally giants that walk among us. Bill Kunstler has been our friend. He's been the friend of every man and woman seeking justice in these times. I remember one of the greatest speeches he gave was at when he received an award from the Criminal Defense Attorneys Association. And not content with the honorific, he got up there and ripped apart the profession and the conduct of law and said it more simply and directly than anyone in that position could have. And it's a cautionary statement for how, you know, we make fun of how news fools have this mandatory camaraderie about the weather, you know. Well, there's another thing that commercial press does, and that is they keep repeating the phrase, crime is down, crime statistics are, and that's only a measure of a certain type of crime, outdoor crime. It's not a measure of office crime. It's not a measure of what Peter Vallone is doing to kill future children on behalf of the landlords. It's not a measure of the crime done by lame duckers who don't give a damn about voters anymore and are selling out. It's not about the crimes in the offices. Well, Bill Kunstler said the biggest crime wave we have today is the crime wave of prosecutorial misconduct. Well, that's only one of many things he said, and like I said, he's laughing, and his spirit, you know, much like others, other giants we've known, people like Samori Marksman, his spirit is so big that one body could not hold it. And we're fortunate that there are people like his widow, Margaret Ratner, the president of the William Moses Kunstler Fund for Racial Justice, who continues in that straight-talking, name-taken, butt-kicking way on behalf of racial justice. It's people like Randy Credico, who's done a tremendous amount of work just in the past year alone, what with the Rockefeller drug law vigils, and putting it on the map and putting the boxcar operators in the legislature under the gun as the protest builds to the repeal of those laws, an idea whose time has come. And people like you, all of us share some aspect of what it was that Bill Kunstler has represented. So on this occasion of his 80th birthday, I'm very proud here at Earthwatch to share a little bit of his life acoustically tonight, beginning with a bit of a documentary of some of the sayings and doings of Bill Kunstler, William Moses Kunstler. And as time permits, we'll also hear some sounds of people celebrating his life at the memorial service that was held. But here now, for your consideration, mere elements of a life too large to be contained, that of Bill Kunstler. I'm Robert Knight, and this is Earthwatch.
Some said William Kunstler was guided only by the glare of publicity. He insisted his mission was to represent those sidelined by mainstream society. Whatever drove him, he was a fighter for his nearly 50-year career in the law. His most high-profile case was defending the Chicago Seven, including Abby Hoffman, accused of disrupting the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. Many of his clients were figures in the American civil rights movement. He was Martin Luther King's lawyer until the day the Reverend King was assassinated.
This was almost going to be my swan song, coming back to Minnesota. I wanted to try this case. We had a case. I was just relishing having this man on the stand for 3 or 4 days. We wouldn't go as long as the Simpson case at Mr. Bond, but we would have gone 2 or 3 days with him. His record is so bad. But I want to just call your attention that this is the kind of informant that's being used throughout the United States. So they're purchasing testimony, they're excusing all sorts of crimes by the informant, and the American people are paying through the nose for all of this. The price has gone up and up, now up to almost $100 million a year to pay these people to buy their testimony.
In the political whirlwinds of the 1960s, defense lawyer William Kunstler seemed always to be in the eye of the hurricane. Even as those changes were beginning in 1961, the ACLU asked Kunstler to go to Mississippi to help the hundreds of freedom riders fighting for desegregation. From civil rights, he moved on to champion almost every cause of the radical left. Black militants, Indian activists, student dissidents. His defining moment came when anti-war protesters were accused of trying to incite a riot at the 1968 Democratic Convention.
They were the Chicago Seven, and it led to epic courtroom battles.
The Chicago Seven.
What was the significance of the Chicago Seven trial?
It taught me how to fight, and it taught a lot of people throughout the country how to fight.
It's the people's war, and the people have to fight it and be part of it.
Fight the power. Fight the establishment. That was Kunstler's message. He was now famous, a hero of the radical left. He grew his hair, smoked some dope, and became an unlikely sex symbol.
Bill's whole professional life has been one of joyously incurring the wrath of the establishment.
The way he sees it, there can be no justice for blacks in a society where all whites are racist.
All white people?
All white people. You, me, all white people.
How do you presume to tell me what's in my heart?
Because I think I know from my own experience and what goes through my own mind and what the effect of my society was on me, what the effect must have been on all other white people.
So, by his definition, every case is a race case.
To the whole system. The whole system is so corrupt and rotten on every level. I'm talking about the legal system, both on the civil side and the criminal side. That I think it takes very courageous lawyers to stand in there and say, you're a corrupt system, and I'm going to try to prove to the general public that you, the system is corrupt. Race is corrupt, whatever word you want to give to it. That it's a bulwark against certain people trying to keep the savages at bay as long as it's humanly possible to do that. So I think it's more than just taking a nice libertarian concept that everybody deserves a defense and Lord and Lady Bountiful should come in and furnish that defense. I think, you know, for certain lawyers, many people don't have this feeling.
Right.
But I think I like to see more and more attorneys who feel deep in their gut that that's what a lawyer ought to do, even though the lawyer gets the brickbats, gets hated by everybody, and they're really not hated by everybody, by some.
Right.
Maybe in the majority, I'll admit that. But I think you got to take those cases and stand up, you know, like a man or a woman in the court and fight for them.
For the first in New York.
Leslie, it's a monstrosity. It's the First Amendment ever proposed to change the Bill of Rights. And it's done out of panic, out of political pandering. And I think it would be a disgrace if we let the Bill of Rights, for the first time after some 17 amendments, be changed by a constitutional amendment to restrict freedom of speech or reign. But in this case, the court is being subjected to intimidation, and so are we, by pandering politicians who want to jump on the flag-waving bandwagon and get the public to give up some of its rights in order to sustain a position that's untenable.
We could have gone in there with suits, ties, shirts. We could have been very quiet at the defense table. We could have kept off the stand every witness who would be peculiar. But instead of doing that, we put the complete gamut on. We put revolutionaries on. We put people who believed in drugs, psychedelic drugs like Timothy Leary. We put people who were open homosexuals like Allen Ginsberg, proud homosexuals, and so on. And we showed them the complete gamut of what many of the defendants are, what they believe in, what they tolerate, what their lifestyles are, what they hope happens in the country, whether it be by revolution or by social change. We spread the whole gamut before them.
But I'm a con artist. I'm a pool hustler. I'd try and con you out in the street. Whip your ass. Steal your shoes.
And his voice and Richard Burton. Sort of a Welsh thing, you know. This is called setting the fee.
Welsh thing?
Welsh.
Okay,
right.
Setting the fee. Yeah.
No sooner had the client described his case with full and adequate sufficiency than did the lawyer don an earnest face and sigh, now to the matter of my fee. I've never sought such legal help before, the subdued client solemnly replied. I need to have some help upon that score and hope that you will be my learned guide. The lawyer coughed and started to explain how much it cost to meet his overhead and why this case would need his might and main if justice were to be adroitly led. He paused, a thoughtful look upon his brow, then charged the most the traffic would allow.
Mandela's gone, we must recall his prototypes who sit in stateside jails and hope their own salvation will befall before the memory of his visit fails. From coast to coast and somewhere in between, these prisoners of conscience wait the day when they, like him, the last of bars have seen and finally walk once more on freedom's way. It's not enough to build a hero's throne, the one for whom the gates have opened wide, and then forget the hundreds of our own who still remain securely chained inside. That Nelson would approve, there's little doubt, if we could blot our own apartheid out. You like?
Bueno.
It's not a bad little sign.
No, it's not.
It'll appear in the Amsterdam News in 2 weeks.
Written in Oaxaca.
Red. Jig is up.
The average first offender gets 2 years for burglary. We were all first offenders, so that's what Sophia and Peg drew.
2 years in the women's reformatory at Framingham.
But our crime wasn't burglary. It was sleeping with white girls. They threw the book at us.
Burglary, count one, 8 to 10 years. Count two, 8 to 10 years. Count three, 8 to 10 years. Count four, 8 to 10 years. Count five, 8 to 10 years. Count six, 8 to 10 years. Count seven, 8 to 10 years. Count eight, 8 to 10 years. Count nine, 8 to 10 years. Count 10, 8 to 10 years. Count 11, 8 to 10 years. Count 12, 8 to 10 years. Count 13, 8 to 10 years. And count 14.
14 counts of 8 to 10 years.
All the sentences to run concurrently.
Shorty thought he had hit us with over 100 years until I explained what concurrently meant. It meant a minimum sentence of 10 years hard labor at the Charlestown State Prison.
Mr. Morrison, you were charged with lewd behavior on four counts. Simulated masturbation, public drunkenness, profanity, and public exposure. How do you plead?
The defendant pleads not guilty, Your Honor.
Then trial is set for the week.
Your Honor, I want to bring to this jury's attention the fact that there's playing right now on Broadway a musical called Hair, where the actors disrobe and appear naked on the stage.
Objection, Your Honor. That's irrelevant. Shouldn't be considered.
Your Honor, how can you sustain that?
This is a fact, Councilman.
This is a major First Amendment violation by the politicians and the police of Miami. Every single witness they've brought here has testified to not actually seeing my client's genitals, except one, who is related to the arresting officer. I tell you, if you convict on such lack of evidence, I assure you that someday, somewhere in the still of the night, you will wake up screaming.
Tonight. Why is Caroline honoring William Kunstler, an enemy of America?
He said, what happened to the guitar? And all I remember was Jerry Rubin say, it shrank. One of our best guests was Paul Preston. Many of you know Paul. But an interesting one, which probably you can say about all of us. But when I put Paul on, he had been to Chicago during the Democratic convention, and he was supposed to tell what it was like in Lincoln Park. But I saw when he went up to the stand that this man was bombed out of his mind. He had dropped acid in the men's room outside the courtroom. Said, Mr. Krasner, what is your name? He said, I was born in Albany, New York. I nodded. I got my yellow pad. As if that was just the answer I wanted. And when did you come to Chicago? In August of 1968. judge could never get the name McDonald. He thought his last name was Joe. And I said, Country Joe, will you take the stand? So in the record of the trial, there is no McDonald. There's just Mr. Joe.
Bill Kunstler, a reminiscence produced by Randy Critico. That last bit was from Caroline's Comedy Club. I'm Robert Knight. This is Earthwatch, and there's more coming up right after this.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nights in Tiananmen Square. Coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the wars against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the sorrow in the street, places where the races meet, from the homicidal bitchin' that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve and who will eat. It's coming to America first, the cradle of the best and of the worst. It's here they got the range and the machinery of change, and it's here they got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family's broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA. I'm sentimental, if you know what I mean. I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I'm neither left or right. I'm just staying home tonight. Getting lost in that hopeless little screen. And I'm stubborn as those garbage bags that time cannot decay. I'm junk, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. Democracy is coming to the USA. Sail on. Sail on, oh mighty ship of state. Shores of need, past the reefs of greed, through the squalls of hate. Sail on, sail on, sail on.
That's Leonard Cohen. I'm Robert Knight. This is Earthwatch. And today is the 80th birthday of Bill William Moses Kunstler. We go now to the Cathedral of St. John Divine, November 19th, 1995.
While some people may view me as wildly and indiscriminately tilting at windmills, I see myself as a keeper of the faith, fighting for my own personal vision of America and my own personal goal, that someday, somehow, we will find the hidden path that leads to what we have always outwardly prized but never attained, equal justice for all.
I think the African-American community has lost a very valuable friend, a consistent friend who is champion of the rights of those who could not defend themselves over the years. I'm here because I have to, this is the only way I can honor the man.
To me, he was a modern John Brown.
I remember him for his humanity and justice to the underdog, which gets all my praise.
We truly regard him very high as a very superior human person who always helped the people who nobody else could help them. So we really miss him.
One of the great humanists I've ever met in my life. And I met him first at IS-201 when we needed a lawyer about 4 o'clock in the morning. I called up 4 or 5 lawyers. They couldn't make it. I called Bill. He just asked me what time. And he was there.
He was just a very special person, and I think maybe once every 100 years he will have somebody like Bill Kunstler.
He's an American hero.
Yeah, he defended everyone, you know, who needed to be defended, all the political prisoners this government puts away. He was there to defend them. It's going to be greatly missed.
I've known him since I was a little girl. When in 1965, Bill Kunstler was the reason why I went to Mississippi to become a freedom rights worker.
He's been one of my heroes. It's one of the reasons I'm a lawyer.
I'm here because I love Bill Kunstler.
Why'd you love him?
Because he hated racism and he acted against it.
The elders in the traditional leadership of the great Lakota Nation gave this man an Indian name. They called him Wambli Ikabashwa, the eagle that watches over you.
What you will hear this afternoon is a selection of the things Bill liked and things that were important to him. We want to invoke his spirit and celebrate it.
My father loved music, especially the music that is such an important part of the civil rights movement. In his 1966 autobiography, Deep in My Heart, he described a 1961 meeting of freedom riders at Tougaloo College in Mississippi. He wrote, "The bells of Woodward Chapel began to toll, and in a matter of minutes, the building was filled with freedom riders. They sang freedom songs, many of which had been born in Parchman Penitentiary. This was the first time I had heard many of the songs, and although I have listened to them many times since, they never meant as much to me as they did at that moment."
On the mountain, my lord spoke, out his mouth came far and smoke. Down in the valley, on my knees, ask my lord, have mercy, please.
He came to visit me in jail immediately after I was arrested here in New York. I'd like to read a passage from his autobiography, My Life as a Radical Lawyer, which evokes that era. Attica was a ticking bomb in September 1971, a bomb that exploded, causing fallout for more than 2 decades on the political and social landscape of New York State. I have never quite recovered from Attica. For a long time afterward, I was filled with hate. I hated the public officials who allowed the massacre to happen. I hated their coldness, their inhumanity. Attica showed me that the government can be heartless and will even sacrifice the lives of its own to save face and protect the status quo. Today, things are much the same. Attica is still overcrowded. The prison population remains 80% minority, and the guards are still almost 100% white. The harassment of inmates by corrections officers continues. Attica, like Chicago, changed me immeasurably. Although the tragedy saddened me, it did not depress me. I have never been one to throw up my hands in defeat, and more than ever, I was determined to fight. Attica stimulated me to action. I grew stronger, harder, more resolved in my beliefs and goals. I would go wherever people's lives and civil rights were in danger. I headed for Wounded Knee.
Today I'll be reading the last stanza of American Names, a poem by Stephen Vincent Benet. This poem was given to Bill during the Wounded Knee trial in St. Paul. He quoted this segment of the poem at the end of his summation at the trial. He said it was the best summation he had ever given. He continued to quote American names at almost every occasion that he could find a way to make it relevant, or sometimes not so relevant. I shall not rest quiet in Montparnasse. I shall not lie easy at Winchell's Sea. You may bury my body in Sussex grass. You may bury my tongue at Chamedy. I shall not be there. I shall rise and pass. Bury my heart at Wounded Knee.
This is words by Bill Kunstler when he was being sentenced by Judge Julius Hoffman for contempt of court in the 1969-70 Chicago conspiracy trial. I quote, Your Honor, I have been a lawyer since December 1948. Until today, I have never been disciplined by any judge, federal or state, although a large part of my practice has taken place in hostile southern courts, where I was representing black and white clients in highly controversial civil rights cases. Yesterday, for the first time in my career, I completely lost my composure in a courtroom as I watched the older daughter of David Dellinger being rushed out of the room because she had clapped her hands to acknowledge what amounted to her father's farewell statement to her. My bail was revoked and I was taken to Cook County Jail. I felt then such a deep sense of utter futility that I could not help crying, something I had not done publicly since childhood. I am sorry if I disturbed the decorum of the courtroom, but I am not ashamed of my conduct in this court for which I am about to be punished.
Consider just a few of the huge cases in which this radical Kunstler was the people's spear point, the people's warriors. He was on the front line defending Martin Luther King, Adam Clayton Powell, Stokely Carmichael, Bobby Seale, Daniel Berrigan, the Attica brothers. Remember also Bill trying to negotiate with Rocky and his assassins? Bill Kunstler. Bill Kunstler proved to me for many years the possibility of multinational struggle for democracy and socialism in the U.S., because it is finally in our practice, our acts, that our revolutionary commitment is shown. Because it is in our concrete participation in the anti-imperialist and anti-racist struggle that will unify us, regardless of the other concomitant aspects which still sadly separate so many of the oppressed, repressed, and exploited from each other. And that it is this always raging struggle for democracy that is the fuel for the masses of people's move to fully revolutionary positions. But Bill was, like too many of us, overworked, stressed out past the moon, constantly confronting the cruel, the ignorant, and the greedy, which, brothers and sisters, let me assure you, can take a whole lot out of you. Remember, while we are demonstrating or writing tracts or essays or circulating petitions or marching or, like Bill, preparing our briefs, staying up night after night to get physically fully prepared for yet another skirmish with the actual unmetaphysical devil, devil and company are laid back somewhere, maybe Bermuda, grooving on our children's flesh. Bill Kunstler was a law artist, but he was also a soldier. Like the brother told me who called to inform me of this blow to people struggling for democracy all over the world, I got this call. And the brother, Akita, who had once been defended by Bill as well, said simply, one of our soldiers has died.
Tis the old ship of Zion. In harmony, 'tis the old
ship of Zion, get on board, get on board. It has landed many a
Danville became a real watershed for both Arthur and me because we amalgamated so much with the community. We were asked to give sermons in churches on Sunday. I think lawyers by nature are probably good preachers. You know, good Baptist preachers. So we went into these churches and we gave these breast-beating sermons about civil rights and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and got a very receptive audience. And we were accepted not just as lawyers, you know, people in pinstripes or what have you. We were accepted as part of the ongoing struggle. And it became a very effective tool that the lawyer would not just be someone who came in and did a few things in court then left. But the lawyers became part of the struggle itself. And it became what Arthur and I have since called being a people's lawyer.
My name is Jane Drazik, and I'm Bill's second daughter. These are his words. They tell of one of his most favorite and, as many of you know, most oft-told stories. Back in the early 1950s, I was in the Accademia in Florence, looking at the Statue of David. Bernard Berenson was in the gallery, and I didn't know who he was. He came up to me and said, "Young man, what do you think of the statue?" I said, "Well, it's a very great statue, very beautiful, musculature. He interrupted me and said, "That isn't at all what Michelangelo was trying to do." He went on to describe how Michelangelo was trying to show a man at a moment of decision, how we all have those moments in our history, a time that comes when, if you don't do something, no one will be the wiser, so you won't be at any risk. But if you act, you risk yourself. Berenson said, that's what Michelangelo was trying to do. I never forgot it, so I brought back a small statue of David, and I set him up here in my office. Whenever there are moments in which I'm about to be held in contempt, I think of David, and I try to imagine his situation. He did put the rock in the sling, he did hit Goliath, and it made him a hero for all times. But what if he had missed? He would have been one dead shepherd boy.
This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. A little bit of reflection and recollection on the occasion of the 80th birthday of William Moses Kunstler, who lives among us even now in the form of the William Moses Kunstler Fund for Racial Justice. It's an organization that could use your help, by the way, if you are able to donate either energy or finances. You can give them a call tomorrow or at your convenience at 212-924-6980. This here is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. My name is Robert Knight. Here's something for Bill.
The home of the free, the land of the brave, where fear and frustration dance on your grave, where martial law blows in the breeze, with basketball plays and the greatest of ease. No more health care, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes. Education at a minimum wage, looking at the future and then turning the page. Homeless in shelters, homeless tomorrow, one paycheck away from homeless sorrow. The global economy becomes a global slave. Who do we dispose of and who do we save? The panther is yawning, the rhythm and blues, conservative smiles on the 5 o'clock news. Here comes news, here comes the ground, here comes the fury, here comes the sound.
Healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes, no more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes.
Hitmen for America with contracts to kill, right-wing fallacies on a liberal thrill, debates the deals and media leaks, they get the talk shows and we get the freaks, neighborhood jails for neighborhood crimes, family and friends drop neighborhood dimes. No public TV, no public opinion, total oppression of a total dominion. The real design, the ultimate plan, confusion becomes God and God becomes man. Bobby Hutton was the first to go, the panther raised and tried to grow. He licked his wounds, he buried his dead, he bowed his arrogance but never his head. Into the country, out the back door, CIA, DEA pimping this whore. Guns, badges, and ID cards. Corruption complete with security guards. A kilo of a vial, a pipe of gram, are closely related to Uncle Sam. We sniff your bags, you sniff our blow. Playing with justice while playing the pro.
No more healthcare.
The crack house, daddy's at the border, dial 911 and place your order. The war on drugs, one great big joke. Can you finish the paperwork? Cause I finish the code. Record companies with thumbs up their ass, blowing smoke up yours while passing gas. Sing that song, tap your feet. There goes our music, here comes their beat. It once was real, it once was true, it once had meaning we once knew. Powerful men with so little eyes, feasting on children with illusion and lies. Control, manipulate, control. They pump up the volume and twist our soul. Bunchy Carter was a sacrifice. Our Fred Hampton paid the price. They came from the heart, they came from the street, without Glock 9s or hip-hop beats. Gun battles, death and mental fatigue. Who was down and who was in league? Gangster rap, gangster sound, gangster dreams of who I am. From the rural south, the industrial north, the panther came stalking, the panther came forth. Huey, Bobby, and Geronimo Pratt, a Finney and a Sada, some of all of that. Young, precocious, and very brave. They made mistakes, but always gave. Irresponsible, we sold them out. Instead of support, we gave them doubt. Afraid of ourselves, afraid to be free, afraid of being what it means to be.
No more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes, no more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes.
Niggas, niggas desiring the American prize, trying COINTELPRO on for size, turning their backs on the rising sun, turning their backs to
to a loaded gun caught in between what it means to be white. That's only left and the dangerous right. Protect yourself, protect your kind. Self-defense from a selfless mind. Justice for yours, justice for all. The beauty of the panther up against the wall. He wins, he loses, he fights again. His love for freedom, his only friend. Understand the panther, understand the law. The fight for justice can be brutal and raw.
This is Earthwatch, Last Poets, in the spirit of Bill Kunstler. You know, they once asked Mayor Sharpton, Reverend Al Sharpton, the actual mayor of New York City today and in the future, whether he felt hypocritical being represented at one point by Bill Kunstler. Some fool reporter asked him, said, well, you know, don't you think that's hypocritical here? You are a black radical, and you're being defended by a white Jewish lawyer. Of course, the Reverend Al replied, saying, oh, Kunstler's white? This is Earthwatch, celebrating the 80th birthday of the magnificent Bill Kunstler.
Ben McCauley asked me, Abuelo's father, can you tell me what happens when I leave this world?
This is Earthwatch on WBAI New York, celebrating the ongoing life of Bill Kunstler. This is some Lakota music by Buddy Redbow. Wika Nagi Makoche Ekta Oichimani Wan, The Journey to the Spirit World. My name is Robert Knight, and I'd like to give thanks and praise to Margaret Ratner, President, and Randy Credico, the Project Director of the Rockefeller Drug Law Reform, of the William Moses Kunstler Fund for Racial Justice. You can be in touch with them at 212-924-6980. Give me some support. And we conclude tonight with the announcement that I'm on my way to try and find journalism at a convention of journalists. It's going to be a hard task. I hear our executive director of this, our parent corporation, Pacifico, is out there. So I'm going to be like Saturn, holding that light, looking for an honest woman. So I'll be at the Unity Conference, and I'll see you sometime soon. And we close with this one more thought for Bill Kunstler. Happy birthday, Bill. This is Earthwatch.
I dreamt I dwelled in a homeless place where I was lost alone. Friendly smile. homeless ones where you may walk. Receive amazing grace. I dreamed I dwelled in a homeless place where I was lost alone.
Just one final note. Tonight, almost as if in celebration of that 80th birthday, in just a couple of hours at 3:49 a.m. exactly, if you look to the west, just look due west, halfway up the sky from the horizon, you'll see a bright star. That's the star of Vega. At exactly 3:49 and 30 seconds, there will appear a magical light in the sky. It is an iridium flare. And to my thinking, the candle on the cake for Bill Kunstler's 80th birthday. I'm Robert Knight. This has been Earthwatch.
I'll never get used to these 10-mile runs. They are taking so much time out of my day.
Are you training for a marathon or something?
Diabetes runs in my family, and I heard if you lose lots of weight, you can prevent it. So I started running like crazy, and I cut my calories big time.
Oh, get real. You don't have to knock yourself out to prevent diabetes. My doctor said it's the small lifestyle changes you make that matter, because it's easier to stick to them.
Wow, really?
It worked for me. 6 months ago, I started walking a lot, and I stopped eating the fried stuff. I've lost 10 pounds. My doctor said I'm doing great.
I'll have to ask my doctor about this. I'd love to get my life back.
Talk to your healthcare provider. Losing a small amount of weight by being active 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and eating healthier can prevent type 2 diabetes. To get your free game plan for preventing type 2 diabetes, call 1-800-438-5383. This is a message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the National Diabetes Education Program.
Energize the new season with WBAI's Feminist Film Festival. Five Fridays in the fall, September 26th through October 24th. See feminist film classics of many different eras, plus comedy, live performance, and speaking to directors. Kicks off September 26th with just-released feminist stories from women's liberation. On October 10th, celebrate Indigenous Peoples, a.k.a. Columbus Day, with feature-length Salt of the Earth, plus a live performance by Mahina Movement. October 17th, Lizzie Borden's cult classic, Born in Flames. For the full schedule, go to WBAI.org. It's all at 388 Atlantic Avenue. The doors open at 6 for shorts and feature are at 7:30. Become a WBAI buddy and get in free. Oh, and we'll have wine and popcorn too.
tuned to Rather Station, WBAI 99.5 FM, 37, 34 minutes after 1 o'clock. Listener here sitting in for Jim Froyne, who will return next week right here at 99 Cinco, WBAI, at exactly 1:30 next week. This is Hour of the Wolf. Jim Froyne's special guest next week will be Veronica Shenas, and that's going to be extra special. So, this is Hour of the Wolf in the news.
young enough to catch me. No, they can't, no. They can't catch me. No. Dada is a mighty man. Dada is a